Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mutto at Midnight with your host, Mutto Sasquatch. Mutto is a shaman who works with the written and spoken word. He has played his flute, offers sacred smoke in the four directions. Please join Mutto in sacred ceremony. And now, Mutto at Midnight.
Hey, everybody. Before I get started tonight, I've noticed there are new sound effects in the queue, and I'm not exactly sure what the purpose of these might be, but the first one I'm noticing here is called Dracula Unholy Master. I don't know which of our WithInsightsRadio.com hosts is using Dracula Unholy Master, but let's take it's 14 seconds, so let's take a listen to it, shall we?
Be thou exorcised, O Dracula, and thy body, long undead, find destruction throughout eternity in the name of thy dark, unholy master.
Well, I can't add anything to that. Hi, folks. This is Mutto at Midnight. I am your host, Mutto Sasquatch. Thank you for joining me. As I just mentioned, this is the WithInsightsRadio.com channel of BlogTalkRadio.com, and you can find out more about our channel and our various hosts by checking out WithInsightsRadio.com. You will find out about our great leader, Chief Iggy. I didn't mean that the way it came out. He is our great leader. But I don't. It's not. I kind of made it sound like I was being facetious. And I didn't know he is. He's the guy who's in charge, and he's nice enough to allow some of us to use his blog talk radio channel to gab, to opine, to talk about spirituality as each of us sees it. Most of the shows on the channel, you will probably be able to get readings. I don't do that so much. I've even kind of let my shaman tarot thing kind of fade here for the past month or so. I am going to pick that up again. I will make a promise. I'll pick it up again next week. We'll see how my promise comes out. My record is not terribly impressive on the promises, but. Yeah, it's the show is so much centered around what's happening in the world right now and in my life right now. It's centered on me. It's all about me. So how can I do readings? Huh? How can I? I don't know. I've been asked. That's not quite the way either. Iggy has encouraged me to develop my skills in doing readings. And to that end, he presented me last Christmas with a deck of shaman tarot cards, which are pretty much traditional tarot cards with shaman symbols. And I've had a good time exploring those. I still have to look in the instruction book. I haven't memorized them yet. But I think some good things have come from that, and I want to continue to do that, maybe use those in some different ways than I have in the past. I'll have to pick that up next week, as I said, because they are residing at my apartment in my very large city in the Midwest, and I've taken some time, come here to my the city of my birth, to stay with my parents for the Thanksgiving holiday, and that's sort of lost my train of thought there. For one thing, it's the reason why I don't have the shaman tarot cards, because I left them behind. Left a lot of things behind. I felt I needed to, because as I discussed last week, if you're here last week, this is repetition, sorry, but I have to keep everybody up to speed. I'm feeling that I've been feeling some danger. I feel that I've been putting myself into dangerous situations, which is a symptom of what was happening when I started working my 12-step program 8 years ago. It's something that made me think that I needed to make some sort of a change in my life was the amount and the frequency of danger that I was entering into voluntarily by choice, knowing that bad things might happen. That, I guess, may have engendered in me a feeling that, goodness, midnight is so late. I felt, one of the things you explore in the 12 steps is your relationship with your higher power, and I think I may have felt my higher power. Well, I know my higher power was protecting me because I never, going into the situations that I went into, I never found any sort of harm. No physical harm came to me. All kinds of harm came to me as a consequence of things I was doing, but it wasn't a direct consequence. I never went to jail. I did have things stolen from me from time to time, but I never suffered any physical harm. So maybe the fact that I didn't ever, get a bloody nose made me think that there was no way that I could. With that experience being so far in the past now, 8 years, maybe I've forgotten those lessons to some extent, and I need to remember them. So I want to talk about that experience a bit tonight, and so this is going to be a very Mudtoe-centric show. This is going to be Mudtoe talking about himself. But again, the idea of the show is the written and the spoken word. I say what I'm moved to say, and I can only hope that it finds someone who needs to hear it. So that's where I am right now. What happened in 2007, which is, again, when I first started working in a 12-step program, let me take one step back. Again, this is something I said last week. This is repetition. Sorry. Maybe it's not repetition. Now I can't even think of what I was going to say. I started working. I'll just start with what I was going to say, and maybe I'll think of it later. I started to work a 12-step program because I realized that, as the first step says, I was powerless over my addictions, and my life had become unmanageable. Now, what precisely were my addictions? That's a little bit harder to put my finger on. I did drink. I did use various intoxicants. This developed over my life from really starting it from the age of 17. And it was always a problem because I always had to hide it. But I was very good at hiding it. And it never impacted on the rest of my life until the last couple of years of my second marriage. So this would have been the mid-1990s. Is when I was traveling a lot for work, so I had a sort of a built-in way to keep my addiction life separate from my regular life. The problem was the amount of currency it took to keep that life up. Now, as it happened, my wife was also running a business that absorbed a lot of currency, so it was often possible for me to sort of commingle those things. That's what happens when I was very successful keeping the two lives separate, and then all of a sudden they weren't separate anymore. I don't think my wife ever realized exactly what was going on up to the time. I would think that when we got divorced she would have mentioned it, and she didn't. So that's what makes me believe she didn't really know what was happening. So that left me in a place where I was continuing doing things that I had to hide. It was fear of being arrested and that sort of thing was the main thing. That went on sort of hot and cold until 2007, when I was living in a small city where there was a branch of the large university that I eventually ended up working at in the large city where I live now. I was working at the branch, and I was also trying to start a videography business, which was still possible at that time because not everybody had video cameras and not everybody had video editing software. It was sort of on its way out at that time, but it wasn't, you know, there were still a little bit of money to be made. And I felt good about all of that. But at the same time, I had taken an apartment, a very inexpensive apartment, and it was in the busiest drug and prostitution neighborhood in the city. So I didn't know that, of course, when I took the place. But I have very weak boundaries, and I also was having this issue with putting myself in dangerous situations. Well, here were dangerous situations around me all the time, and people, especially women, especially pretty women, can talk me into doing things that are not exactly in my best interest. And this is not to say, for years when I did my talking about this, I would throw a lot of blame their way. That's not appropriate. I made all of the decisions that put me where I was. But it became, there was no way to separate the two worlds anymore. The addiction world, the dangerous world, became the dominant one in my life, and it became much more difficult for me to perform well at work. It became much more difficult for me to operate this video business than one. And we had a number of things. I was doing high school football games. I had a little movie I was trying to get together based on a script written by one of the professors at the college. In fact, it's funny because I saw what made me think of that was I just before I went on the air, somebody liked my announcement that the show was coming on. I put on, Mudtoe Midnight coming on, and it's one of the actresses from that movie. And we actually filmed some of it. So I wonder if she's out there listening to this right now. Well, if you didn't know, now I'm going to tell you why we never finished it. What brought things to a breaking point was that I became involved with a woman who was a crack addict, and she was absorbing most if not all of my income, and she was getting me to take her. I'd take her dangerous places. She talked me into taking her friends to dangerous places. I was very, very deeply involved in everything that was going on there. About the only thing I never did was deal. I never sold any dope myself, but I suspect that I took some dealers on their nightly rounds once or twice. I'm pretty sure that's what was going on. And people started showing up at my door. Do you want me? Can you take me to such and such a place? Or such and such a person told me you could do this for me, or that you'd give me some money, or that this, or that you'd do this or that. And that frightened me, the fact that people were coming and knocking on my door, but I didn't stop. It didn't make me stop. And the woman I was involved with took a bunch of stuff from my apartment while I was asleep. And that didn't make me stop. Later on, I took her back. And I took her to meet my parents. Isn't that a fun thing? I took her to meet my parents. And she drove because I was supposed to go to Haiti. That's one of the things of working with the college. I was going on a trip to Haiti. I was being recruited to do a PhD project on this. They send people down to work with teachers in Haiti. So I was going down. I was going to take a bunch of video of that and teach a lesson down there and see how that felt. So I was getting ready to do that, and I had just gotten the whole pincushion treatment. You had to take all kinds of vaccinations before you go to Haiti. And I felt sick. I just felt terribly sick. So this young lady, she offered to drive to my parents' house, which I let her do. And as we were coming home, she ran a stop sign, and the police stopped us, discovered that she did not have a driver's license. She had a warrant in, I believe it was Cleveland, and didn't show up, so they'd lifted her driver's license. So she went to jail, had a $700 bond. And of course, I didn't have the money. couldn't go to my folks for that money. I went to a friend of mine who I was hoping would invest some money in my video business, and I talked him out of the $700, bailed her out, and she took off, and I lost the $700. Ended up having to go to my parents anyway to pay them back because I didn't have the money. So that was, bad relationship with the folks for a while. Bad relationship, you know, he wasn't going to, the businessman wasn't going to invest in my video business after that. And, you know, on the heels of all that, you know, I flew to Haiti, thinking maybe this is my salvation. But come back 2 weeks later thinking, no, I think I've had about as much of Haiti as I want to have. I'm glad I went, but I don't think I'll go back again. Now, during all this time was when I had started going to the 12-step meetings. I was put onto that. Actually, I had to as a condition of getting out of the hospital. I believe I told this story last week. When the young lady had taken all that stuff from my apartment, I went to the local hospital ideating suicide, and I had a little stay there. And one of the conditions of getting out was that they gave me extras, a bunch of things I had to do. One of them was to check out an AA meeting, which I did. And I read, there was a piece, there was some stuff from their literature that was read out at the meeting that appealed to me, and I started going more. And as you know, work started getting more scarce, I found myself going to AA meetings, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a day just so I would have something to do. And so I wouldn't be in my apartment with people knocking on the door, you know, wanting me to take them places and do things for them and whatnot. So what finally got me out of that situation was in January of 2008, a friend in AA had knew someone else who in the big city had a house with a room for rent. And he's someone who understood the issues and was willing to take me on as long as I could pay him a small amount and that I would continue working my program. And once I had gotten away from that situation, things started to move in a positive direction for me. I got into the PhD program at the big school and stayed in that for 4 years. I got a job at the big school, and then a few months later, I got a better job. I continued to work those 12 steps, and I stayed reasonably clean. There was a slip up here and there. Generally, there was a one-time, one-day thing, and then be back on it for 6 months or 12 months or 18 months. So not a perfect process. But I never felt in danger of going back to that dark place that I was before. I mean, the other things were I was drinking, and you know, maybe I'd go home with somebody I shouldn't go home with, or I'd go to a hotel with somebody I shouldn't have gone there with. But it wasn't, you know, nothing to the level of what was happening to me, you know, back in 2007. Well, it's the thing that happens with the program. You start to fade away from it as things seem to be going well. I think it's been 2 years since the last time I've been to a meeting. And I need that. The meetings can be problematic because the meetings are alcoholics meetings. And while that's a part of my thing, it's not all of it. It's not even the worst part of my thing. And a lot of AA meetings, they don't like to talk about anything other than alcohol. They want to stick to alcohol. You try to bring in the narcotics or the other things that sort of go with it. They want to stay away from that. So you have to find the right meeting. And it seems like I'm going to be retracing my... I feel like I have to go. I feel, even though the 12 steps, there are things about it you know, the very heavy reliance on the traditional Christian higher power, for example, is difficult for me. I just find a lot of times I feel compelled to keep my mouth shut. There's two reasons there. First of them, because I'm not talking just about alcohol, and second, that I'm talking about spirituality that's different from what most people are going to be talking about. It's interesting. I went there was a meeting I went to. It was a late night meeting. I felt the need for it because I was in classes. PhD classes usually run from 7 to 10 p.m. And I was finding I was, you know, wandering around a bit rather than going straight home at night. So I found a midnight meeting downtown. And I was sort of hinting around these stories, you know, that there was also involvement with narcotics and with female crack addicts and blah, 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 blah. One of the guys came up to me after the meeting and told me sort of in hushed tones that there was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting at such and such a place and such a time. And I went. Actually, I think I went to two. And boy, are Cocaine Anonymous meetings intense. I mean, they are intense. They had, you know, people they had, you know, trucked in from rehab to go to this meeting. They were in the traditional, because I taught in a rehab for a long time. Is that an irony? But anyway, they come in the t-shirts and the gray sweatpants and the just tennis shoes. So they're not, you know, they can't blend into the crowd. It would be easy to spot them if they tried to run away. And lots of stories. And I don't know that I had ever encountered such brutal honesty in my life, and I kind of feel that's what I need, but I don't know if I could find that again. It's like, it's one of those things where they don't, you know, you can't go on the internet and find it. Someone who's involved in it has to guide you to it. And I did ask my caseworker. And this is an incredible advantage because I did not have a caseworker the last time I was going through this. There's someone that I can, you know, I have some resources, someone I can call that can talk me down. But I asked her to get me some, to explore some resources that maybe wouldn't necessarily be straight 12-step resources, but would be something similar to what, you know, I'm in this situation. You know, I've been in a situation before where I've been, you know, surrounded by the sort of illegality that goes with the drug and prostitution scene, and I succumbed to it, and now I've been placed in the middle of it again. See, that's the thing. At least where I lived before, I had distance from it. I had to actually, if I was going to act out in that way, I had to get in my car and find it. Well, now it's three blocks away from where I live. I can walk to it. And that's probably something that's going to have to change, but it can't change in the short term because I've been placed there. It wasn't my first choice. Wouldn't have been my ninth choice if I'd have known, you know, about it, what I do now. It's, you know, it's a nice place, but, you know, there are now crack addicts who know where I live, and I don't necessarily want that. I mean, it's so close that I have run into people I've talked to from the crack house. You know, this is the story I told last week. There was a shooting at the crack house not far from where I live, and they'd scattered. The crack people had scattered all through the neighborhood. And I took a young lady. I bought her some lunch, and I talked to her for like two or three hours. I mean, she now knows where I live. And I've talked to other people on the street just on my nightly walk. You know, I sat and talked to people, repelled their attempts to get me to come into the dark alley with them. But they would. I've had one person recognize me in the convenience store, and I recognized her too. You know, oh yeah, I remember. Was also recognized at the bus stop once. So this is starting to become just, it's just too close to the situation I used to live in at the time I got involved with the 12 steps, and it needs a stop needs to be put to it. And I think returning to the 12 steps in some form is a good first step. It's not going to stop this by itself. So I have to utilize my friends. I have to. I'm thinking very carefully about who I'm going to. Everybody, just about everybody knows I've had a problem with alcohol, but they don't know about the stuff that goes with it. But to say to certain, well, they may know it now. If they listen to the show, I'm going to find out who actually listens and who doesn't. But some of those people need to be, for my sake anyway, someone that I can call and say, look, this is how I'm feeling. Can we go, can we meet at Steak and Shake, and just talk for a little while, it's just late night thing. That's when it gets bad at night. There's no one around. I start thinking about it, I start thinking how, my feelings that I've screwed up my life and the damage is permanent, and, there isn't going to be anybody for me. Certainly there isn't anybody for me after they hear this story. It hurts. It hurts to have those thoughts. And, it drives me to the streets sometimes. Sometimes I just have to go out. I can't just stare at my ceiling and my walls and be thinking thoughts like that. So I need alternatives. I have to start building alternatives. And I say you're probably going to be hearing a lot about those alternatives. My plan for the show, and of course the show never goes the way I plan, I pulled up this website that's got the 12 steps, and I wasn't going to talk about all the 12 steps, but I thought I might talk like about 2, 3, 4, the ones I might be hitting next. But that didn't seem to come up. The show took a different tack. But the next one, step 2, is came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So that brings us to the greater power thing. I'm willing to believe in a greater power. I'd go along with 2. Came to believe the greater power that could restore us to sanity. Question is, will it restore us to sanity? God, the Christian God anyway, seems like he wants to withhold the good stuff a lot of time. Doesn't want to. He could have helped us all that time, but he never said anything. But that's his plan. That's the plan, which kind of leads to number 3, which is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. See, that's a tough one for me, especially if we're stuck with a Christian God, because there are some childhood, more teenage issues with the Christian God. I always looked at the path as my higher power, not the shining path, but the path being I know when I'm on the path. The beginning of 2008 was when I started to be on the path. I know when I'm off the path because things are shitty. That path is that easiest, maybe not the easiest, but the best way for me to go and accomplish whatever it is that I'm supposed to accomplish. So we're out of time again. We're going to have Sean Montero next week. And probably more talk about this stuff. I'm sorry, but it's occupying the primary position in my life right now, and there's no way I can get away from it. So if I can't get away from it, there's no way I can keep it out of the show. So I hope you'll please bear with me. And again, I hope somebody out there finds something in this that's helpful to them. Okay, I think that's going to be it for this evening. Thank you for joining me, and I will be speaking to you again next week. Have a pleasant good evening.